Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Milwaukee, start your engines. It's time to talk about all things racing. NASCAR, IndyCar, sports cars, and Formula One. This is the Final Inspection Show, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Now, here's your host, Steve Zocchi.
And welcome to another edition of the Final Inspection Show. I'm Steve Zocchi, along with the Polish Pipe Bomb, Jeff Verlaski.
What's happening, Steve?
How's my voice?
It's a little shaky today. You know, I know you're a little bit under the weather.
I should probably say the upper Midwest. It's probably easier to say, who's not sick?
Yeah, you know, so far I'm hanging in there. As long as you don't have the corona, you're good with me.
Don't think I have that, but it is upper respiratory, minus the fever, though.
All right.
So if you have a fever and you have a respiratory issue, then you should go see the doctor.
Well,
the corona.
Too many big weekends in a row for you, you know?
I wish.
Partying like a rock star.
I haven't gotten anything done in probably 9 days now. I just go to work, come home, and then sit on the recliner.
Yeah.
You know, in that mode. As I'm sure a lot of other people are, too. You know, it seems like when you were a kid, or back when you would get the flu, you know, they'd had the 24-hour flu.
Right.
You'd get sick. You'd be wiped out for a day. You'd kind of feel sick, and then you'd be done. It'd be like a 2.5-3 day kind of window. And then you'd be, you know, back to your life. Now it's like you get these colds and just respiratory issues and sinus infections that just linger and linger, and you just don't want to let go.
Well, it's like a hangover in your 40s. It's, you know, 10 times worse than it was back when you were young and partying like a rock star. You drink half as much in your 40s as you did in your early 20s,
sure.
and you're down for twice as long. So, you know, what can you do? Got a busy weekend, though.
Yeah.
You know, lots of cars on the track out in California.
Which has been better as of late.
It has been better, which, you know.
You know, we were on this show very, very anti-Fontana for many years, and then the last four or five races, the track has seemed to kind of cured in and kind of has that age, and you got some tire wear, tire drop off in it.
It's been more racy.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was one of the things I really enjoyed about the race in Vegas is, you know, you had cars on completely different strategies. You saw in the short run last weekend, Kevin Harvick was just straight dominating and would drive, you know, straight to the lead and take a 4 or 5 second lead. 25-30 laps into the run, now all of a sudden he's, you know, dropping back to fourth, to fifth, because he had a short run car.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of cars were set up for the long runs. And, you know, unfortunately for Kevin Harvick and Harvick Nation, which I am a part of.
Is there a card that comes with that?
Yeah, I got the commemorative pair of underwear.
Oh, okay.
So, but...
It says Bush on it, right?
Of course.
Instead of pink, you know, the yeah. girls have the ones that say pink on it.
Yeah.
This one says Bush.
You know, but for Kevin, the late caution came too late. And
and to somebody else.
You know, well...
Blaney. I mean...
Blaney had that wrapped up.
We'll talk to Dennis Michelson in the next segment on this, but, you know, 20 cars on the lead lap, it just... What happens at the end of these NASCAR races now? Calamity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all just bumper cars, cars drive into each other, and, you know, now I wouldn't pit anymore with a couple laps to go.
You know, it's tough. You know, you got
Unless
certain
there's like
tracks.
Five cars.
You have certain tracks you have to. Atlanta, you have to.
Well, there because it's so abrasive, but I mean, you know, even then, because a lot of times you're not going to be able to get that full final lap.
Oh, I know. And that's what used to drive me crazy about the Xfinity series and the truck series, is that there would be 10 laps to go, and it was like a college basketball game,
right. Yeah.
Where the last 10 laps takes an hour and a half, because it was just caution mm-hmm. after caution after red flag after caution after caution. And now the Cup Series is starting to get the same way.
Because you have those drivers who drove like that working their way up.
Right, and then, you know.
And nobody says anything about it. Drivers don't police themselves, teams don't police themselves, and NASCAR doesn't police themselves.
I know.
It's frustrating.
It is frustrating. But, you know, heck of a win for your boy last week. I'm sure you were thrilled. But, you know.
I'm at the age where I don't throw the remote. 10 years ago, though, that remote would have been against a wall.
Yeah.
I was just so disgusted to see him get a win like that. I mean, it's one thing, you know, DW was at the end of his career, and he got a couple of cheap wins when he was running that 17 car with Silver. Who the hell is sponsoring it? Parts, auto parts store. Western Auto. It's kind of a cool car. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And he lucked into two or three wins on gas mileage. But you had some, with that, you were like, is he going to make it? Is he not going to make it?
Right.
You know, you see these at tracks like Michigan and that. So there's some drama there. And then, you know, of course, we had it with, you know, with Pocono, too, with Buescher. But, I mean, when DW was doing it, okay, you had some different strategies and that. That I don't mind because you're trying something different. You're trying to, you know, okay, steal one and that. But, you know, to win like that, and then to have a teammate, man, if I... Blaney, I would have threw my helmet so hard against the transporter when I got back. I would have been so mad.
Oh, yeah, I know.
You know, Windsor's at such a premium. And, you know, he's on a good team. He's got that going for him. But then, you know, of all people, Logano. Keselowski, maybe. All right. But Logano, you just got it. You know.
Well, and then with Logano, you know, it was a miscommunication, you know, because the crew chief wanted him to pit. And and he didn't pit. He stays out and he wins a race.
Or did he?
Well, you know, they said it kind of both ways in the post race interview.
Right.
I take it where it was a miscommunication and they lucked into it, because I don't want to give him any credit because I hate him too. But you know, it was disappointing, and it was such a buzzkill because I know that you watched the fight the night before, Wilder and Fury.
Yeah.
And that was one hell of a brawl.
You know,
Fury killed him.
Boxing has been in such the doldrums, and it's been just...
Well, the heavyweight division.
The heavyweight division, especially, and MMA is just kicking its butt. But that was so compelling. And then the personality of Fury and everything.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know anything about him because I used to follow boxing. You know, we were talking about this. You know, at work and other places. You know, boxing is one of those, you get a bunch of guys together. That's when it's the best. You have four or five guys together. You know, watch boxing. It's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Watching it alone is not much, but I actually enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty cool. It was a good match. And, you know, like that personality. I mean, You got him, and then you got Joey Logano.
Right.
Come on.
Oh, I know.
You know, you got him singing and
doing
karaoke
in front of the entire MGM Grand. And
it was awesome.
A lot of the NASCAR drivers, Austin Dillon, Mr. Personality, a lot of those guys could take a big-time hint from Tyson Fury because, you know, you want to sit there. Not only was the post-fight and everything that happened in the ring supremely entertaining, he made himself just a ton of money going forward because of his personality. You know, he's going to be more marketable. He's going to sit there and draw more fans to all the fights he's got coming up and everything like that. And, you know, if there was a guy like that in the NASCAR garage, and it doesn't seem like there is one since, you know, Tony Stewart's retired and stuff like that.
Yeah, both fighters gave a very good accounting of themselves.
Yeah, you know, Wilder got his ass kicked.
He did, but I mean, he gave a good accounting of himself after the fight too. He wanted to, you know, he wanted to go and continue to box and whatnot, and they literally threw in the towel. And but you know, you're like, oh, yeah, too bad he lost. But you're like, you know, he's not a, you know, he seemed like a good guy, a guy you could get behind too. So
absolutely, even though he's come out with 100 different excuses why he lost in this last week, but
the guy's 6 foot, what, 9?
No, I know. He's huge.
Yeah. No, the guy is just, he's huge.
He's a monster.
Yeah.
You know, this is, because I'm actually going out tonight. This is the first night, like weekend, Saturday night, that I've gone out that it hasn't been to a concert in forever.
Wow.
So I kind of feel like a kid again, Steve.
Better wear a mask.
Yeah, I ain't worried about that.
Wash your hands. Oh, just keep washing them all night long. Perpetually washing them.
Yeah, I'll just, you know, I'll carry a 55-gallon drum of hand sanitizer with me.
Oh, that's the other thing. Yeah, I'm in dental, and we also have a medical side for supplies and that, merchandise and whatnot. Everything's just flying off the shelves.
Oh, I bet.
I mean, masks, all everything is just, it's crazy.
You guys got to be making a ton. You're the one company in the stock market that's going
happens,
up.
What happens with situations like that? There's programs in place where everything kind of gets triaged. So you got to make sure the hospitals are on the top of the list.
Okay.
And there's like a trickle down. So you got your hospitals, then it goes down to clinics, and then it goes down to like doctors' offices and whatnot. And then on the bottom, of course, would be your dentists, you know. Let's be honest, you know, I mean, but yeah, it's just very interesting how, yeah, this is a pretty big deal. And you know, we've had this before, and the best thing is just education. And as we've seen in the past, a lot of these, let's be honest, you know, the hygiene across the world is not the same. And and you hear these doctors going on online, the best thing you can do is keep washing your hands, keep yourself clean, don't touch your eyes and stuff like that. And now that goes a really, really long way to doing it, and not necessarily just wearing a mask. And wearing a mask is not going to really do much unless you're sick. If you're sick, wear a mask.
Right.
But if you're not sick, you don't have to wear a mask. It's actually probably drawing more stuff into you.
And if you're healthy, if you're like 20 to 50 in good health, you really have nothing to worry about.
Yeah, that's the thing. If you would get this coronavirus, what they do is they support the systems that it affects most, which is your breathing and stuff and that. And it's a kind of what, 1 to 2% fatality rate, and those are always your, unfortunately, the people that are at risk for everything else too.
Immuno, and the
elderly and the very young too. So
yeah, it's not a big
the flu has killed far more people this year than coronavirus.
Of course,
yeah,
of course. So like
that's your public health message.
I ain't worried about it, but
from the final inspection show today.
Yeah, Xfinity qualifying going on now. Right now, Ross Chastain is sitting in on the pole, but
a lot of stuff to talk to. We're gonna have Dennis Michelson coming up next. We're gonna talk about last week in Vegas, this week with California, and then we also have David Land coming on the show. We'll have three questions with Larry. Eddie Lapine will be on later too, talking about Amelia Island that's coming up next week. One of the coolest events out there if you're a car guy. racing cars or street cars, everything. It's a pretty neat event. So,
and we're going to have a Packer Combine report from good old Mike Clemens.
From Mike Clemens. Yeah, so we're hopefully he will call in. I watched a little bit of that last night, and Jonathan Taylor did pretty good last night, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Sub 4.4.
That's amazing.
40.
For his size, and so was the guy from Alabama or something. Somebody was like 6'7", 360, ran a 5.1.
Yeah.
Do you realize how quick that is?
Hell yeah.
Over 350 pounds. Can you imagine that coming at you?
That's four times faster than I can run.
That's amazing. So, yeah, hopefully we'll talk to Mike Clemens coming up after this. Let's take a quick break. We'll have more coming up in the Final Inspection Show brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi. Presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. On 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Welcome back to the Final Inspection Show. Steve Zadke along with Jeff Orlowski, the Polish Python. Joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, it is Dennis Michelson. Dennis, thank you for coming on.
You are quite welcome, and thank you for having my proper music to welcome me back, because I am disturbed.
Always. Absolutely, you are.
I was feeling fine this morning until you sent me a text. Now I think I have your cold.
Yeah, I know. It's just brutal.
You apparently didn't wash your hands before you sent the text message.
No, actually, we have a typhoid Mary at work. I'm calling her out
right
now.
Oh, yeah.
We have a small office, and she came in and just must have exploded her DNA everywhere. The little things that attack. I posted a really cool video about how the coronavirus works, but on how the little things attached to things inside your body and replicate themselves. I mean, it looks disgusting, but it's just a fact of life. You know, it's one of those things when you watch the National Geographic channel and they take a shot of your skin and you have all these little invisible bugs crawling on you all the time that eat the dead skin and that kind of stuff.
Some things are better to not know, actually.
Oh, right. You know, it's just like, who is that? The government, the food and drug administration. They allow a certain amount of, debris in your food as long as it's under a certain percentage. There's a lot of secrets out there.
Hot dogs can have so many bug parts in them.
Right.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Right.
You know, I figure, you know, what won't kill you or what will kill you will make you stronger, whatever.
Yeah, the floor sweepings are really, they add to the taste, you know.
Dennis, to pit or not to pit? That is the question at Las Vegas.
Yeah, track position is getting to be the theme again this year. I mean, we even saw it at Daytona, you know, at a you know, quote unquote plate track, even though they're not technically restrictor plates the way they used to be. But you're still seeing track position and fuel mileage being what determines it, because guys don't have enough horsepower to finish a pass and to get away from anybody. And I'm not saying this to dump on NASCAR and say it's a lousy product. I'm just saying that it's a different product than what we used to see, when guys used to be able to finish a pass and run away from somebody because they had a big power advantage. And on a particular day, if they really got the setup perfect, they had so much more speed than the other guy that they could break the draft or they could pull away and they could dominate a race. In today's NASCAR, that just is not possible, which means strategy is what it's all about. And it's the timing of the cautions, and it's just this, it's like playing in a, you know, like a three-dimensional chess game. There's so many pieces in play and so many different strategies that can be played out. which makes it a lot tougher for any one team to dominate. But the weird thing is, if you look at the number of races that come down to, you know, the luck of the draw of pit strategy or track position, look how many times Logano wins those races over the last couple of years. That team really has a knack for figuring these things out in the heat of the battle, which is pretty remarkable when you think about it.
Right. Well, I just don't understand why you would pit in that, you know, situation with so many cars on the lead lap. Jeff and I were talking about in the previous segment. I just think with the way these races have been playing out for the last two or three years, that usually they don't make it to the checkered flag anyway. So just roll the dice.
Yeah, the data says that the time differential for the tires should have mattered. But when you bunch them all back up again in restarts, you quite often make those tires mad in traffic trying to get back to the single file racing so you can then hunt guys down with better tires. So it's just kind of a weird strategy that plays out in these races now. And even if the data suggests that new tires are faster, quite often they don't get to be used because of traffic and, you know, the fact that clean air is still more valuable than new rubber.
I got a kick out. I was watching NBC Sports Network and, you know, watching the NASCAR channel, and AJ Allmendinger goes, well, whether it was a mistake or not, I'm like, what do you mean whether it was? No, it was a mistake. He lost a race. Just say it. Don't say whether it was a mistake or not. Have an opinion, AJ. Come on.
Yeah, that's the thing is it's like so many times, you know, some of these old drivers that are on as you know, so-called analysts or even the drivers themselves are, you know, that are in the race are almost afraid to stick their necks out and be real vocal about it. You know, it's just very weird. But it has really come down to sort of this fine line of kind of out-guessing the other guy, because the other thing that came into play was not only pitting, but how many guys and who didn't pit were the keys. You know, a few different guys from that contending pack come in, and that whole pack that came in is going to do much better. It's just a very there's so many layers to this competition right now that come down to something other than speed of the race car, because the speed of the cars is so even nowadays, especially as they remove power at a track like Las Vegas. And, you know, it's still a track where it's kind of tough to make those passes, although the track did seem to come in a lot better than the last couple of years. We're actually able to see something resembling multiple grooves. But, you know, at a track like California this week, throw everything back into the mix, including weather. You know, we could have a situation where weather could affect this. And if the weather comes at the wrong time, they're never going to get a 2-mile track back and ready to run. And with an evil forecast for Monday as well, these guys could be racing to halfway tomorrow.
Oh, really? I thought it never rains in Southern California. Isn't that the song?
Yeah, that's the song, but obviously the song is did not check with the forensic meteorologists before they wrote those lyrics. It is a kind of an unusual time, though, of the year. It's kind of late for Southern California to see the typical rains. Usually that's something that ends a few weeks earlier, which has always, you know, been the time that they're drag racing up the road in Pomona. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting mix tomorrow, because it's not one of those deals where it's you know, guaranteed to be an all-day heavy rain that's going to rain you out. The showers will be there, but it's going to be very sporadic in that inland empire of California near Fontana. So that adds another variable to the mix. And if they get the rain or not, it's going to be a much cooler day and more clouds tomorrow as well. And we've seen how finicky these cars can be nowadays, handling-wise, with a difference of handling. And, of course, this is a race where there'll be they'll be qualifying and they won't be able to make any changes after today's qualifying. So very interesting how that's all going to work out. It's the rule package and the rules on individual weekends, and then the way the race, you know, plays out with the cautions end up being sort of more important than how fast your driver is nowadays in NASCAR.
Yeah, well, don't mention the weather, Dennis. It seems like NASCAR has been cursed the last 2-3 years with prolonged and multiple weather delays every single season. So looking ahead to the race tomorrow in California, we all know the names with a lot of wins at Auto Club. Jimmy Johnson, you got the brothers Busch, are both very good out at Auto Club. Is there a couple other guys besides Jimmy and the Busch brothers that you're really kind of keeping your eye on in tomorrow's race and expect them to do well? We know that Alex Bowman paced both practices yesterday. Ryan Blaney led the 20-lap average, which is always important as well. Who are you keeping an eye on for tomorrow?
Yeah, I like the way the Fords were handling on older tires in practice. You had Blaney that was strong even on one-lap speed, and so was Bowyer, but they didn't seem to be falling off as much. But if you look at just the speed charts from yesterday, it was pretty even between all the makes, which is interesting. I'm kind of wondering if it comes down to selection of racing line. And this track could be very, very finicky depending on the weather. You know, sometimes when it gets nice and hot and slick, that upper groove really comes in, and that would favor a guy maybe like a Kyle Larson, who's, you know, likes to be on that high line. But I kind of like the Fords tomorrow. I think specifically I'll take the Stewart Haas Fords. I would take those guys and give you the rest of the field for tomorrow. That's how much I liked how they looked in practice yesterday.
Well, that's interesting, because I know in first practice all four Stewart Haas, they were all in about the mid-20s, and then happy hour came, and, you know, Harvick cracked the top 10, Bowyer, Amarola were up there as well, Cole Custer's kind of holding his own, so they definitely found some speed in between first practice and happy hour.
Yeah, and they also, what they found was a lot of them went out very early in that happy hour practice with a qualifying setup, and then they switched over, so the fast speeds you saw on the board were more reflective of what they might do in qualifying trim. And then but the qualifying trim difference is so little. But what we also saw was that they were also holding their speed quite well, because later in the practice, when they did some longer runs, that's when those, you know, 10-lap averages came in, and Blaney was still doing pretty good on those. So very interesting to see. It's not, I think they do get to make some changes to the car between qualifying and after, but not many. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all goes. I think they can only make like tire pressure changes is about all they can do getting ready for tomorrow. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this all weighs out. And I could be completely different on the rules too, or wrong on the rules, because it seems like every year they change the rules on me. And every once in a while, I'll get caught on a race where I don't understand completely what they're trying to do. But I don't feel bad of that, because the commentators on TV often seem confused too, so I'm in good company there.
Well, when I was watching some of the talking heads on TV talk about NASCAR, which I really try not to do because I do not enjoy being spoon-fed NASCAR propaganda, but watching some of the shows this week, are we kind of jumping the gun on Jimmy Johnson with how well so far he started the season and with the success that he's had at Auto Club? You know, a lot of people, the topics, can anybody beat Jimmy Johnson this weekend? Oh, is Jimmy Johnson the man to beat? The guy hasn't won in what seems like, you know, 3 or 4 lifetimes. He had, last year he was completely uncompetitive. Obviously, the new Camaro is driving really well, and Chevy has found more speed, and they're doing a lot better this year. Even though in an interview, Jimmy Johnson called it a Monte Carlo, which takes you back a bunch of years as well. Are we jumping the gun and giving Jimmy a little bit too much premature credit here?
No, I don't think so, but you're right. It's been a long time since he's been competitive. If you want to look at it, you know, it was all the way back to July of last year since he had his last top five finish in a cup race. So that's in a, you know, that's a long, long time in the career of Jimmy Johnson. Then you look at the winless drought, and it's even longer. But what I look at, with what encourages me about what Jimmy Johnson is doing, is not that Jimmy Johnson is so much getting better, but we're seeing William Byron's car better. We're seeing Alex Bowman racing better. And, of course, Chase Elliott's been doing fine no matter what the last, you know, couple of years. But we're starting to see the rest of the Hendrick camp doing better, including some of the teams that are running their engine package are doing better as well, like Kyle Larson. So, and Kurt Busch running really good as well. So I look at those things, and I look at the product that they're putting out on the track is getting better. And maybe it's that front nose on the Camaro this year, the slight tweaks. I mean, we're not talking major rule changes on any of these cars. We're talking really minor tweaks. I mean, I remember when a manufacturer used to make a change and you were talking, you know, tens of pounds of difference of downforce, you know, 30, 40 pound difference in front downforce this year. Now there's just such a subtle change that, and it just seems like that subtle change is enough that it's even the playing field again for them. They were way behind as far as a group. Hendrick Motorsports was no longer in that top tier of teams. They might be back this year. And if they are, I wouldn't bet against Jimmy Johnson going out with one more strong year.
All right, very good. Thank you, Dennis. Coming up next, we'll talk about bounties. Coming up next on the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Final Inspection Show. Steve Zotkin along with Jeff Orlowski. Joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline once again, it is Dennis Michelson. Dennis, thank you for once again joining the show. And I got to give credit to Kevin Harvick in that. He's you know, bringing in some publicity to the truck series, isn't he, by doing this bounty?
Yeah, he really is. But what I'd like to see publicity-wise in the truck series is some regular driver in the truck series racing for a chance to win his bounty by beating Kyle Busch. Wouldn't that be even better than another cup guy beating
yes.
someone? I mean, this is where the money's really needed.
Right.
You know, right now it's about $140,000 a race to rent a top-of-the-line truck to go truck racing. If you're going to spend that amount of money to win $100,000, I mean, that's sort of Washington D.C. math there. You know, losing 40% of the dough, costing you 40% more roughly. But yeah, I would have loved to have seen him put that bounty out and have Marcus Lemonis match it. If anybody could beat Kyle Busch in a race where Kyle is running, that's what really needs to be done. You know, let the truck regulars win some of that money.
Yeah, I agree, Dennis. And also on the flip side, is this what we really want? Because all we've been doing for the last 5 years is bitching every time Kyle Busch is in the race. And then we wanted them to limit the cup drivers that can race in the lower series. So they limit it in the truck series, in the Xfinity series. Now, all of a sudden, we've got Kevin Harvick throwing a bounty out there and Kyle Larson and who is it, Chase Elliott, have jumped on for Atlanta. And the other track is escaping me right now, Kansas. But, you know, is this what we want? We've been crying for years and years and years about let the truck guys run the darn truck series. And now all of a sudden we're all clamoring for more cup drivers.
Yeah, I don't get it. And here's the thing is we saw a classic example last week out at Las Vegas, how little anybody cares about the Xfinity series or the truck series for that regard. But the Xfinity series was a classic example. They started their race 1 hour after the cup race ended last week. That track was sold out. The grandstands were packed. There's a huge crowd in the infield. Did you see how many people stuck around to watch the free Xfinity race an hour later?
About 12.
Yeah, maybe that's it. I mean, it was incredible how quickly that place emptied, and you only had to wait an hour to see a race for free, and you didn't stick around. If that doesn't send up a red flag that NASCAR's development series, which is what the trucks and Xfinity have sort of morphed into, remember, the trucks used to be a home for guys like Joe Ruttman, for Mike Skinner, for a lot of these, Jack Sprague. You know, all of these classy racing veterans who couldn't afford to go cup racing or because of their age weren't attractive to cup owners could find a home in the truck series. And at that time, getting in a truck or, you know, getting the money together to go truck racing was maybe 10, 15% of what it cost to go cup racing. Now, it's at such an incredible amount of money that it takes to race in either the Xfinity or the truck series. You turn back the clock, and we couldn't see a Robbie Reiser and Matt Kenseth story of pooling their savings and, you know, getting on the old trailer and taking a trip down to North Carolina to race in a couple of Busch races back then. We never will see a story like that again, because the cost of racing at those levels has gotten too expensive. You notice that Matt and Robbie didn't team up to come down and race a couple of cup races. They couldn't afford to do that. But they could afford to run Busch Grand National back then because the cost was like 30% of what it costs to run cup. Now it's closer to 85%. The only difference is you have to buy more tires to be at the cup level. That's about the only difference now between the cost of running cup versus Xfinity versus trucks. If you're just trying to get into the field, that is going to hurt those two series. And as we've seen, nobody cares. Nobody shows up to watch these races. The television ratings are minuscule compared to cup. And I don't think any amount of cup racers or cup drivers running for a bounty is going to change that. What we need to see are good young drivers battling cagey old veterans like we used to see back when the truck series was just starting out and racing at tracks that were a mile and less. That, to me, was a formula that made the truck series different, exciting, and now we've lost that, in my opinion.
Very good, Dennis. I did want to circle back on Vegas. I wanted to mention this in the last segment. Matt DiBenedetto finished second at Vegas. I think with all the, I don't want to say controversy, but with Logano kind of stealing that win and Blaney that was in position to, that kind of got lost in the mix, didn't it?
Oh, it did. And I'll tell you, after I put out my preseason power rankings over at frontstretch.com, I caught a lot of grief. You know, oh, you're just putting DiBenedetto in there because you either like the Wood Brothers or it's that feel-good story. I thought he was one of the top 16 guys this year in the Cup Series, and I almost wanted to put him up in the top 12. That's how much I felt about that team and driver because they are using Penske equipment. You know, it's good equipment. And now we saw a classic example that this guy could get it done on an Indy sized track. He's a tremendous talent. They got a good team. They got good equipment to start with. The Guido story might be one of the fun stories to chase this year. And he's also a really nice guy. And I think that comes off on TV too.
It does.
Very likable and humble guy, but a lot of talent. And it's like the guy who's finally getting a chance after, pitching in the minor leagues for 12 years. And now he finally comes up. It's like the catcher the Brewers had a few years ago. That finally got a chance to play after so many years in the minors, and he did pretty well down the stretch. That's the same kind of feel-good story we're seeing with this, and it's very enjoyable.
Well, Dennis, we certainly appreciate you coming on the show. Who do you like this weekend in the Cup Series at California?
I was going to take Blaney. That was my pick in the beginning, and I think I'm going to stick with him. And my goodness, what a great Kobe Bryant paint scheme tribute that they put on the car this week. Very fitting for running out in California. He was fast. I'm gonna stick with Blaney. I think he's got a good chance this week.
Do you want to go out for an Xfinity one too?
Xfinity? I'm gonna take Brandon Jones in the Xfinity. Good old number 19 is gonna be my pick.
Brandon Jones, all 120 pounds of him. Okay.
All right.
All right, Dennis, thank you so much for coming on the show. Hopefully I'll have a normal voice next week.
There you go. We can only hope.
All right. Appreciate it, sir. That was Dennis Michelson.
Yeah, joined us on a Great Midwest Bank hotline. Is your passion outgrown your home? A Great Midwest Bank home renovation loan may give you the space it deserves. Visit greatmidwestbank.com today. Simply local lending since 1935.
Coming up next, a segment that has taken Milwaukee radio by a storm. It's Three Questions with Larry. Coming up next on the Final Inspection Show.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi.
Presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove.
On 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Welcome back to the Final Inspection Show. Steve Zocchi along with my trusty sidekick, Jeff Orlowski, the Polish Pipe Bomb. Joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, all the way from downtown Pewaukee, is Larry Janicek. Larry, welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you, Steve. Sorry to hear you're under the weather.
I've been under the weather for like 9 days. Just won't let go. It's just one of these things. It's part of living in Wisconsin.
Yeah. Well, so, I hope you get better quickly.
Well, I think every time I think I turn the corner, and then I just got this dry hacking cough. Now I'm trying to get rid of. I'm trying to just get my feeling better type thing.
Your voice sounds like you smoked about three packs of cigarettes on the way in.
Remember the show Night Court with the Selma, the Selma girl, right?
I love that show, Marky Post. And
underrated.
Very.
Marky Post was.
She was hot.
Yes, that's. Yeah.
She was a looker.
Mm-hmm.
And Lara Kett, wasn't he the attorney or something there?
Yeah. And then
he was in Baba Black Sheep.
And the judge that loved Mel Torme. So.
Yes.
Velvet
Fog.
One hell of a show. All right, Larry, you got three questions for the soon-to-be dead guy here?
Yep, I do. Okay, this first one is hypothetical. There's a good young driver that's good in both open-wheel cars and in stock car-type cars. He's got $1 million in sponsorship backing. What does that get him in open-wheel racing and or stock car racing? What can a guy with $1 million in sponsorship get for that kind of money?
I'd have a heck of a lot. I mean, I don't you know, it's sad but true. You know, it'll get them to a certain point. You know, one of the things that, you know, you get these dads who are trying to raise the next Jeff Gordon, they put the kids through go-kart racing and get them in the late models and that. And, you know, it does work occasionally. You have guys like Eric Jones and David Reagan, who was a funded driver for a while, then was eventually able to get away from that. But as the economics of racing is getting worse and worse, it first got into European racing, Formula One and all that. And in Europe, it was very common that you needed funds to get rides, and that helped. There's a lot of politics dating way, way back. And then it kind of evolved its way into American open wheel racing, especially on the IndyCar side, even dating back to the 70s and into the 80s, and it's gotten worse and worse. And NASCAR would all say, well, we don't do that. In fact, there were so many drivers back in the 90s and 2000s, especially from the dirt track side, you know, USAC guys and World of Outlaws, everybody was getting a truck deal or at that time a Busch racing deal. And, you know, a lot of drivers actually had opportunities to do both. Case in point is Jimmy Johnson. Jimmy Johnson had backing of Chevrolet, and they asked him which way you want to go at this time, and that was just right when the open wheel series broke up, and he wanted to kind of go open wheel racing, but the path of least resistance, and definitely at greener grass at that time was NASCAR. And so I don't know. It's kind of up to the driver, you know, how they want to do it. I mean, there's places, there's programs in play for that in open wheel, you know, with the Mazda Road to Indy and all that, and there's scholarships, racing scholarships and whatnot. So that's a really tough one, Larry. You know, there's no easy question. I mean, look at World Rico, you know, when he got to, you know, he to kind of get on the map, he funded his way with Keith Coons, and that was supposedly what, $600,000 for that one year, and that was for a full-time midget ride. So, you know, $1 million doesn't go as far as it used to.
So you don't think he could get and this is, like I said, hypothetical, an ARCA ride for the year or a part-time ARCA series?
Well, we've seen him, Chess buddy, Kaz Grala, there is one. He was a guy, right? He was doing good in ARCA and that, and
yep,
funded driver. And, you know, if the money runs out, then you're like him. Where is he today? He's on the outside looking in. So, I mean, once those checks stop, you know, you're going to be in the outside looking in. Doesn't get you very far anymore. You really have to have real, real special talents. And willing to get noticed, like someone like Eric Jones. Eric Jones is like the last one I can think of that kind of, it was a funded ride and made it in the cup, though, on his merits.
Yeah, we only got about 2.5 minutes here, Lair. What's question number two, buddy?
Okay, this week, out of the blue, NASCAR posted the purse for tomorrow's cup race in California. To my knowledge, they haven't done that since they went to the charter system.
Right.
Yeah, you have any thoughts as to why they might have done that?
Because IndyCar,
$7 million.
IndyCar is trying to raise their purses. They go back and forth doing this stuff. IndyCar does something, then NASCAR does something. IndyCar does something, so it's just like a chess match. It's good. It's good though. The purses need to go up in both series.
Okay, I got one last quick one. If you got the time, there was two new inductees this week into the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Hall of Fame, Janet Guthrie and Dale Earnhardt Sr. What are your thoughts on that? Were they both
well deserved? You know, the people go, well, Janet Guthrie, read her book and see what actually she had to go through to get where she was in racing, and making the Indianapolis 500 in 1977 was definitely a lot harder than it would be this year or in the last couple of years. So, you know, She won the respect of a lot of drivers over the years, and I've been very luckily been able to spend some time with her and chat with her in that, and that is one special woman, and you know, this her life and what she was doing whether it was learning to fly planes, parachuting, you name it. I mean, she was and an engineer, too, on top of that. So very, very, very neat story there with Janet Guthrie. And then Dale Earnhardt Sr. is a no-brainer, especially when he won the second Brickyard 400 in 1995.
Yeah, I saw a couple of documentaries on Janet Guthrie. One hell of a trailblazer, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Yep. I was more surprised by Dale Sr. than by Janet Guthrie. I was surprised because Jeff Gordon won 5, and I don't know what the parameters are for getting into that, but I thought with just one win to go in and ahead of somebody that had 5 was kind of interesting. But again, I don't know the parameters.
Yeah. All right. Well, Larry, thank you once again. Appreciate you coming on. Looking forward to chatting with you next week, sir.
Okay, get better.
All right. Thanks, Larry. That was Larry Janicek on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline.
Has your passion outgrown your home? A Great Midwest Bank home renovation loan may give you the space it deserves. Visit greatmidwestbank.com today. Simply local lending since 1935.
Coming up next, we're going to talk to YouTube sensation David Land on the Final Inspection Show.
Your engines. It's time to talk about all things racing. NASCAR, IndyCar, sports cars, and Formula One. This is the Final Inspection Show, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Now, here's your host, Steve Zocchi.
Welcome back to the Final Inspection Show here on Sports Radio 105.7 FM. The Fan, Jeff Orlowski, the Polish Pipe Bomb, along with Steve Zocchi. We go back right out to the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Welcome in YouTube sensation, Mr. David Land. David, how are we doing today, boss?
Ooh, I like when Jeff does the intro. YouTube sensation. That's
I'm trying to save
like
my
that.
Voice.
Going back a couple weeks now, you know, one of the biggest stories in auto racing so far in this very young NASCAR season was the crash and injuries that that Ryan Newman suffered. And you had an awesome video on, you know, the style of racing and everything like that that NASCAR is looking for and getting on these quote-unquote plate tracks. Now that you're a couple weeks removed and, you know, we see that, you know, Newman is going to be okay. He's going to survive. He's walking. He went back to the race shop this week and all that. What's your take on everything now? Is it still the same as when you posted that great video right after the race?
Well, first of all, I'd like to certainly say that I'm very happy that Ryan Newman appears that he's going to be able to live his life and get back into the cockpit. I think, you know, when we were sitting there Monday night, it looked like we were preparing for the worst. And so from that perspective, I'm just very happy. But, you know, I don't think my opinion has changed very much. I think the only thing that's really changed is that once again, and we've kind of seen this with Austin Dillon and a few other examples, is NASCAR has dodged another bullet. Many of the problems that led to the Ryan Newman crash and how severe it was kind of comes from the style of – it's not even really the style of racing, because I don't know if you can really ever change NASCAR super speedway racing because of the nature of the track. I mean, even if you took the restrictor plates off, I think they'd still probably run in a pack for most of the race. So you can't really change the nature of it. But what you can do is reduce the amount of chances that there are for a serious accident to take place. And my big problem with the Daytona 500 was it wasn't the Daytona 500. It was the Daytona 522. And the last lap of the race took place 3 or 4 times because they kept wrecking, and because of the overtime rules, they kept extending the race on and on and on and on. They finally got their close finish, but it came at the price of Ryan Newman ending up in the hospital. So that was my big problem with it. That's my big point of contention, is I would like NASCAR to take a look at some of this stuff, because they're going back to Daytona at the end of the year, right before the playoffs. That race is going to be insane. there's going to be a lot of risks taken, and I just hope somebody doesn't get hurt there, but we'll just have to see.
Yeah, I think that's one hell of a point, and I'm 1,000% with you. If you have a race called the Daytona 500, 500 means it's 500 miles long. It doesn't mean that it's 500 miles and goes on forever until there's nobody left to drive. It means that it's 500 miles. The Coca-Cola 600 should end at 600 miles. It shouldn't be the 625. It shouldn't be the 608. It should be 600 miles. That seems very elementary to an idiot like myself, David.
Sure. And, you know, I've actually, you know, of all the gimmicks NASCAR has kind of implemented, one of the ones that I for a while defended was the green white checker, because I kind of understand that NASCAR fans in particular, and this isn't a slam by any stretch of the imagination, but they want to see a green flag finish. And I totally understand that. I totally get that. And in a lot of ways, I agree. I mean, it is a bummer when a race ends under the caution and you don't get to see, you know, the two or three guys who are running up front, you know, duel for the win when somebody in the back wrecks and they have to throw a yellow. That being said, I think what happened on Monday a couple of weeks ago kind of exposed some of the issue with running so many extra laps. You know, it's not just from a purity standpoint, it's from a safety standpoint, because you would assume, you know, most racing drivers, they are going to lay it on the line on the last lap of the race. And if you only have to do that once, that's fine. You know, that's an acceptable risk, in my opinion. When you do it three or four or five times, you know, not only is it kind of dumb that the race is going on way longer than the scheduled distance, but it also increases that risk factor. And that's the big point of contention I have these days. But of course, like you said, it also is a purity factor. It's like Denny Hamlin's, if they had called the race at 500 miles, Denny Hamlin still would have won. You know, that's the other funny thing about it. There really nothing else changed outside of the fact that you sent a guy to the hospital and the margin of victory was closer.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, if you want to keep the overtime, which I do, because if you sit there and you invest, especially like in a race like Daytona, you invest 3 hours, 4 hours plus watching this bad boy, and it's going to finish and say the last six laps are under caution. That sucks. So if you want to give it one shot, you know, at an overtime at the end, I'm fine with that. But to keep it going and going and going and going just seems absolutely ridiculous. So,
that's the thing. I think that's where you can look at an overtime. I think if you can manage, I mean, you should run the last six laps under caution. And we've even seen, like, if you compare IndyCar, they will throw a red flag, just bring everybody into the pits, clean everything up, and then go green, you know, send them out of the pits and go green the next time by, and at least give an attempt to try to give the fans a green flag finish. But like you said, I think everybody's kind of establishing now that just constantly, you know, it shouldn't be on NASCAR to dictate whether a race finishes under green or not. I think the drivers really should be responsible for that. And that's where people should be, you know, upset or whatever, place their blame. If the drivers can't handle a two-lap shootout without wrecking, you know, that's just the way it goes, I think. I think a good compromise, like you said, would probably be just doing one overtime and just having that, just, you know, whatever happens, happens.
Talking with David Land on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. David, you brought up an interesting company on your last video called FaZe Clan, and that's regarding online racing, correct? In that, can you kind of tell us how that fits into motorsports marketing, NASCAR, and also then I guess with the other sanctioning bodies regarding, are they going to try and get a racing game, online racing game going?
So believe it or not, there's a new partnership, and NASCAR's really been good about this the last couple of years. Has been trying to expand into different markets. So they had an outreach to Barstool Sports, and now they're looking into the esports stuff. They've got their own iRacing series that's officially sanctioned by them with iRacing, but they are actively reaching out to gaming companies and gaming organizations. And on Anthony Alfredo's Xfinity car for Richard Childress this weekend, there's a sponsor called FaZe Clan. And what FaZe Clan is, believe it or not, it's not even anything related to racing as of yet. I don't even think they have a racing-centric esports team. But they are like a gaming company, which was just essentially started on the internet through YouTube and Facebook and kind of social media engagement. Their kind of wheelhouse is like Call of Duty, Fortnite, Halo, if you go back in the day, kind of first-person shooter games. And they've just become very popular. Many of their, you know, top gamers on the Call of Duty scene are in that organization. And so the idea, I guess, for NASCAR is if you can get these guys to come to the races, get them organized, get them to make content at the races, you may be able to convert some people who are just, you know, Call of Duty gamers to maybe check out NASCAR Heat or check out iRacing or come to a race, because one of the guys from FaZe Clan is going to be there. It's an interesting marketing strategy. I don't know how it's going to work out for them, but I think it's worth a shot for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And you know, you just wonder when are we going to get another decent IndyCar racing game? It's been so many years now. I know. Hey, you know, we talked about the one that the Indianapolis Memories one that you post some videos on, which, you know, I like, but I mean, it's a time. I think with Roger and Penske involved in that, I think that is something we probably will be seeing in the next 48 months.
I certainly hope so. The big, and this is a sticking point for me, because this is somewhere where I really, and I'm starting to really hammer IndyCar on it, and I feel bad that I'm doing it, but they are really not engaging younger people in the way that they should be. Again, you look at Formula One with their Drive to Survive Netflix series. You look at their YouTube channel. You look at NASCAR with extending their arm to esports teams and Barstool and things like that. IndyCar is doing none of that. They don't even have a video game. Formula One and NASCAR have a video game. Heck, Tony Stewart's All-Star Circuit of Champions Wing Sprint Car game has a game. You know, it's at this point, they're just not doing a good job just across the board at engaging younger people. I think a video game, even though it's pretty late in terms of getting a major bump from it, they probably should have done it around 2013, 2014 to really maximize that industry. But I still think there's a huge potential gain that they're just kind of leaving on the table by not even pursuing a video game. The problem is, you have IndyCars and iRacing or Forza or whatever, but they don't have all the tracks. They don't have all the drivers. You can't race against Alexander Rossi. You can't race against Colton Herta. You can't race against Scott Dixon. So you don't know, you know, if you're not super up to date on the sport, you may not know any of these people, may not know any of the tracks, and may not be engaged in the way you can be if you load up, you know, the Chinese Grand Prix on Formula One 2019 and run a full Grand Prix, and Lewis Hamilton kicks your butt, and you go, hey, that Lewis Hamilton guy's pretty good, and then you watch the race, and hey, maybe he becomes your favorite driver. Things like that, IndyCar is really lacking right now. And like you said, the last game came out in 2009, and it was about the 60s. None of those drivers are racing anymore.
Right. Good stuff. Let's take a quick break here, because when we come back, we got a lot of news happening in the world of IndyCar racing. We'll talk more with David Land coming up next on the Final Inspection Show. Welcome back to the Final Inspection Show. It's been a fun show. My voice is, I think I might make it, Jeff.
It sounds like you're going to. You know, you sound strong.
Trying to pace it.
You're manning up very well, I'm Steve. Just, I give you a lot of credit.
I'm just happy that I'm not hacking on the air.
Well, I'm glad you're not hacking on me.
Had to mute the mic a couple times, but so far so good.
You're doing good, my friend.
But it helps when you have fantastic guests.
Yes, it does.
Including David Land. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Yeah, I can do all the talking for you, Steve. hope you end up feeling better. I'm sorry to hear that you're sick.
Just part of the, you know, as you know, it's part of life in the upper Midwest in the late fall and early spring. You know, just it's part of the deal, unfortunately.
He's just begging for sympathy. Don't play into it.
Hey, finally got some news, Fernando Alonso, and it makes sense where he landed, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, Fernando Alonso, McLaren. It's so funny because if you went into a coma since the end of May and you woke up right now and heard that announcement, you probably wouldn't have been surprised. But everything that's happened in between then, I think this is actually a little bit more surprising than on the surface it would look, because this saga has continued this entire year. You thought he was maybe going to Andretti, then he wasn't. There may have been something with Honda. What about Toyota? He had cut his contract with McLaren. Would McLaren take him back? Of course, McLaren merged with Aero, Schmidt-Peterson, so there was maybe a hang-up there. There were so many things that changed and happened between last May and this upcoming May. To get to this point is just kind of funny. It's all gone in a gigantic circle. Hopefully it doesn't end up with him going back on the trailer again, but it'll give us a lot to talk about in the next couple of months, that's for sure.
It certainly does, and I it does make sense that they would run the Indy Grand Prix this time, especially after all the problems they had last year, doesn't it?
Oh, God, I hope they do. I mean, they had to have learned, right? I mean, it's and to Alonso's credit, he specifically mentioned, because he was asked by Lee Diffie on, I think it was a Sky Sports interview that was also aired on NBC, you know, would they consider doing the GP? And Fernando was pretty adamant that, like, look, you know, the guys like Elio, some of the bigger names who show up for just this race, they run the GP. And it's not to try to perform in the GP. It's to get that pit stop practice, do leak checks. You know, so many of the things that they had troubles with in last month of May, they probably would have found. I mean, they would have realized that they had the tools wrong in the wrong country in the GP, because they probably would have had to make adjustments, and they would have gone, oh, this is completely wrong. What's the problem? Oh, we're using metric rather than imperial. Stuff like that they would have found if they'd run the GP. Now, obviously, the fact that McLaren has bought into an established team with Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports, that's going to help that process anyway. But still, you know, this is not going to be a full-time team that Alonso is going to be running for. This is an Indy 500-only team. He's going to have some great support. I have no doubt about that. But putting all those people together, I think it only benefits them to run at least one race. You know, if I were them, I'd probably be, you know, trying to make some plans to show up at St. Pete or Long Beach or whatever, just to continue to get some of those reps in before you get to the April 30th test at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and then you launch into the month of May, and then it becomes crunch time, because you've only got a week of practice, then you got 2 days of qualifying, and as we saw last year, you better the car in the paint shop, the backup anyway, because no one is a slouch. Even if the Juncos Racing, they were not slouches. They had that backup car ready to go and ready to run 227.5 miles an hour over four laps, and they bumped him out of the field. So, you know, if there's 35, 36, 37 cars there, none of them are going to be, I wouldn't count any of them out to get into the field. And you just can't operate that way.
And speaking of getting jobs, James Hinchcliffe not only got one job, he got two jobs over the week.
Yes, he's going to run the Indianapolis 500 in an orange car number 29 for Andretti Autosport, which is pretty funny to think about, considering that probably would have been Fernando Alonso's seat with a new sponsor, Genesis. He's also going to run the Indy GT as well as the Texas Motor Speedway round, because they are the title sponsor of that as well. And again, you're seeing what really Fernando, the kind of model that Fernando should be following, is that this is a sixth Andretti Autosport team. They're running the GP. They're getting those reps in, and they're getting prepared for the Indianapolis 500. And of course, James also, at the races that he's not going to be actually racing at, he's going to be commentating in the pits for NBC. And I think they're also going to send him out to some IMSA races, as well as the Brickyard 400. So we're going to get to see a lot more of Hinch than I think we kind of worried that we weren't going to get to see him after he kind of got unceremoniously dumped from Schmidt's team last year.
It's disgusting how good he is on TV.
That's true. I think it's Robin Miller that always says Hinch is going to take their job someday.
Oh, I know. He's an absolute natural, especially, I mean, I was talking to somebody and the Hinchcliffe Honda commercial came on last year. I said, you know, he's really a race car driver. She's like, really? I'm trying to remember if it was here or somewhere else, but or whoever I was talking to, they were like, oh, I thought he was like an actor. No, this guy's really an IndyCar driver. That's how good he is.
Well, you know, there are so many drivers. You know, if you think, though, over the course of history, a guy like Hinchcliffe isn't totally unique. I'm sure your friend David Hobbs is a great example.
Sure.
You think of Tom Sneva, or you think of Bobby Unser or Sam Posey. You know, a lot of these drivers have the gift of gab, and so it's nice to kind of see that the next generation hasn't lost that. And Hinch is definitely – I'll tell you what, too, though. If you watch that testing broadcast, Tony Kanaan was really good in the booth, very knowledgeable, entertaining, and informative. And I thought he did a great job, too. So there may be two fairly current IndyCar drivers ending up on NBC very soon.
Interesting. And then also, I got to admit, I was skeptical when I heard of the Citroën Buell deal, you know, with the new team and everything. You know, how many times have we heard these new teams come about at this time of the year, and then by, you know, May, they're gone. But looks like they actually have a driver, too, Spencer Piggott, driving for them in an alliance, too.
Yes, the alliance is with Ray Hall, Letterman, Lanigan. So that's the third car that usually goes to Oriel Servia. But I think Spencer is a good choice. He's raced for that team before. And, of course, a lot of people forget he was on the front row last year with Ed Carpenter at the Indy 500. So he's not exactly a slouch. I think he got the raw end of the deal at Ed Carpenter. I think Ed had some sort of a deal, kind of a handshake thing, and then Rinus VK came by with a larger check, and Spencer got bumped out. But I think he could surprise some people, especially because if you look at how Ray Hall performed, not so much in qualifying last year, but in the race, Graham Ray Hall was running up front until he and Bourdais got into it, and Takuma Sato finished third. So if you look at that team, it's a sneaky team. It could be up there, and a driver like Spencer Piggott has definitely proven that if you give him front-running equipment, he can run up front. So maybe there's a dark horse there.
I'm also hearing Scott McLaughlin, the new driver. I want to say, I shouldn't say new driver, but the kind of new flavor at Team Penske might be even running more races than just the Indy Grand Prix.
Yeah, I think Marshall Pruitt reported that they were thinking about as many as 8 races this year. So it's escalating very quickly. Scott McLaughlin.
Yeah.
You know, again, Roger Penske doesn't exactly do things in half measures, and he wasn't exactly looking at this, I don't think, as some sort of a fun exercise. It's like, oh, hey, let's put our V8 supercar champion in a car. No, this was serious from day one. And it's pretty clear that once he performed at an adequate level that they felt, I mean, obviously he was third in the Circuit of the Americas test, and right in the middle, he was fast with the Newgarden. So clearly the guy has a knack for this, picked it up very quickly. And I think a lot of people are starting to think that he's going to replace Simon Pagenaud next year, and possibly Pagenaud is going to head over to McLaren. That seems to be what the scuttlebutt is right now, but we'll just, again, early days, but it certainly seems like Scott McLaughlin's here for the long haul.
With going back to Spencer Piggott, you know, you mentioned that, you know, he was on the front row last year and all that. What do you think is a successful run in that car would be for him in the 500?
Top 10. I think if you're a one-off, but you have a decent chance. If you're a one-off for a full-time team, I think if you look at a top 10, you're good, because that's generally where Dryden Reinbold usually ends up with JR or Sage, and they don't run the full season. So I think if you look at a team that's only running the Indy 500 or running a select number of races, I think a win for you is, you know, a top 5, and if you can get a top 10, you've had a really good day. So I think the goal probably for them would be a top 10. But, I mean, nobody shows up there to finish second. I think they would love to get a win, but I think if you're looking at realistically, I think a car like that can get in the top 10.
All right. Well, we've got the NASCARs out at Auto Club out in California, and Xfinity Series runs today. Who do you like in the Xfinity Series today out in California?
Boy, Briscoe looked good last week, didn't he? So, you know, I'll take Briscoe. I'll take Briscoe in Xfinity. Cup's always difficult, isn't it? I'm going to go – let's go with Eric Jones. We'll throw a name out there.
I like that. Okay.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good pick. That's a good pick. Briscoe is too. Briscoe, he's going to roll off third today. Qualifying just wrapped up for the Xfinity Series. You got Brandon Jones on the pole, Harrison Burton riding shotgun, and then Briscoe in third. So that's a good pick.
There we go. Now watch, he's gonna blow an engine in the first lap, and it'll just completely make me look stupid. But
well, you know, hey, at least he'll be doing better than Suarez, who couldn't even make the start of the race a week or two ago. So as long as it's on the first lap and he takes the green flag, he's doing okay.
Yeah, we had a somewhat high-profile bump in the Daytona 500. That's the first time that's happened in quite a few years.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a shocker, especially, you know, Suarez. NASCAR won't admit it, but they definitely want him to be successful. And you could see why, you know, he's got his own little, you know, fan club that follows him all over the place. And, you know, he's an entertaining guy. I root for him. So they want him to succeed, and then that happened, and you just shook your head, and it was like, really? Come on, man. So
yeah, that was an uphill battle for sure for Suarez. I mean, I did feel bad for him, but you know, it is nice every now and then to remember that, hey, the dual races actually might matter still. You know?
That would be nice, yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, they considering that you know, well, especially after the Bud crash race and how awful that was, you know, the Sunday before the duels, that was pathetic. So, yeah, the duels should mean more than they do. So that, that's a good point. So what about for Sunday's race with the big guys? You said Eric Jones.
Eric Jones. Yep, got it on you.
That's right. Qualifying.
Yeah, sorry if I jumped ahead there.
Qualifying there gets underway in about a minute or two, so we'll see where Jones slots in here later. But yeah, good picks, David. I like it.
What's the latest at David Land on YouTube?
Well, we just uploaded a video yesterday, like you said, talking about this week in racing, everything that happened. We're getting ready. About 2 weeks, I'll be heading to St. Petersburg, Florida. I'll be covering the race at the track. Got my media credentials all sorted out, so that should be very exciting. Already working on some cool content there. And then I'll be staying the week in Florida, and we'll be at the 12 Hours of Sebring, the dual event with the World Endurance Championship, as well as, of course, the IMSA cars. And just expect a lot of crazy coverage from all that stuff. It should be a fun week full of racing to spend in Florida, and I hope some of your viewers will become my viewers and spend it with me.
Yeah, Fast Eddie will be down there too. Eddie Lapine, I'm going to have you two hook up down there, so it should be a good time. David, thank you for coming on the show. Appreciate everything you do, man.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
All right, that was David Land on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline.
Has your passion outgrown your home? A Great Midwest Bank home renovation loan may give you the space it deserves. Visit greatmidwestbank.com today. Simply local lending since 1935. You don't need to be a YouTube sensation to use Great Midwest Bank. So, you know, just because your name doesn't happen to be David Land, you can still use them as well.
Coming up next, hopefully we're going to be talking with Mike Clemens, talking some combine stuff from Indianapolis. And how that impacts the Green Bay Packers coming up next.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi.
Presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove.
On 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Yeah, welcome back to the Final Inspection Show. Steve Zocchi along with Jeff Orlowski. Mike Clemens will be joining us in a few minutes here. Meanwhile, Xfinity at California at Fontana. And, of course, Brandon Jones, your pole winner. in the Production Alliance Group 300. Harrison Burton in the 20 cars will be starting second. Got Chase Briscoe, Daniel Hemric, Riley Herbst, and Ross Chastain in row number three. Austin Cindric, Ryan Sieg, Justin Haley, and Justin Allgaier as your top 10. And, of course, it's also the return of Anthony Alfredo, one of the best names in NASCAR you got going out there. I just love that name, Anthony Alfredo, making his first start of the year. Of course, Brandon Jones has been finally got his first win in the Xfinity Series last year, and it's kind of got a little bit of reputation, maybe trying a little bit too hard, wrecking a few cars here and there, but has certainly, I think, has simmered down over the second half of last year and made it into their playoff chase. And I think he's kind of turning the page a bit. You know, with some drivers, it takes a little bit further. One driver who's kind of been kind of like the next guy who's ready to step up, I think, has been looking very good is Chase Briscoe, of course, in that 98 car. And there was some some concern whether he'd be even running this year full-time in the Xfinity Series. And Ford was able to put together a package for him, and he is running. Of course, we're going to be talking to Mike Clemens here in just a moment. In fact, joining us now on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, it is Mike Clemens.
Hey, Steve. Jeff, how are you guys?
Pretty good. How about you, sir?
Pretty good.
So I think the biggest news is the speed out of Jonathan Taylor yesterday. How surprised were the people down there with his 4.39 speed in the 40?
Well, they said it was an impressive workout. And it's funny because we talked to Jonathan earlier in the week, and some of the national guys are saying, okay, so even though he, you know, rushed for 2,000 yards three consecutive years, you know, the knock on him was wondering if he really had breakaway speed that could get him into the first or second round of the NFL draft as a running back. And they said, you know, how fast do you think he can run? He says, I'm going to try and break that 4.4 mark. But in terms of this stuff about, you know, breakaway speed, he said, just watch the film. And there were some Jonathan Taylor fans that said, well, wow. I mean, that's a new Jonathan Taylor because he's, you know, always been so humble or anything. But, you know, Stevie came to the combine with a purpose, you know. And so he runs a 4.37 last night. Pretty impressive. Opened some eyes, coaches, scouts, and even the analyst. And one of the things I thought was interesting is a lot of these guys, and I don't know, I've been doing this for years, and it just occurred to me, because people say, what do you like most about the Super Bowl? And I say that these players, they've reached the mountaintop. So they take a moment to open up and tell their stories. And then I realized, boy, we even get that more from these rookies at the combine, because he doesn't have to answer to Wisconsin anymore. And he hasn't been hired by an NFL team. So these players are their own people, and they got some pretty interesting stories, like Jonathan Taylor from the Badgers saying, you know, when he grew up in Jersey, he watched a lot of Houston Texans football, and Arian Foster, their running back, he adopted his style. That influenced him the most as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Arian Foster was really smooth in and out his cuts for his size. So me being kind of a bigger back whatsoever, you know, making sure that when I play smooth so that it looks natural. And I thought it was just kind of like rhythm and poetry in my eyes.
Yeah, that was a good cut, Mike.
Yeah, yeah. So he, you know, ended up running a great time like that, did well in the drills, and obviously, you know, he helped out his stock.
What about you know, obviously there's a lot of talk about Packers need receivers. And I know that, you know, there's a lot of good ones. It's supposed to be a very receiver-heavy draft this season. What kind of way do you see Green Bay maybe leaning?
Well, I'll tell you, Jeff, the thing that we were most impressed by is all these linebackers that they were talking to earlier in the week and defensive players as well.
Do linebacker first. We'll come back to receiver.
Receiver is something obviously that's on their needs, but I pointed this out to Gary Ellerson last night. He said, yeah, but come on, man. He goes, just because you were able to talk to all these kids that were one of the 45 the Packers talked to this week doesn't necessarily mean that's who's going to go in the first or second round of Green Bay. How many times in the years past under Ted Thompson and even under Brian Gutekunst have we heard that, you know, the first or second round pick saying, yeah, I never even talked to them. I don't remember talking to the Packers. But, you know, they're doing their due diligence and talking to different guys, because if you ain't going to pick them, you may someday have to play against them. And, you know, the combine is a great open door to get some intel on them. And, of course, one guy that's getting a lot of attention is Zach Bond, who grew up in West Bend and transferred to Brown Deer High School. And, you know, he was talking about he understands now that his next step in the NFL is it's more than just playing football.
I mean, this is a business, and I'm trying to provide as much value to a team as I can, and I know they're making an investment in me, so I'm trying to make sure that I'm sufficient in all aspects, whether that's knowledge of the game, ability to play, off-the-field stuff. You need to have every category to be exactly what a team's looking for.
And the thing that I thought was most interesting is, again, these guys giving up their stories, like Zach Bond, who played quarterback at Brown Deer High School. And, you know, Billy Schmidt, Baby Tausch, said, I played against him when he played at high school. He said, you know, he's a beast physically. But he's moved from quarterback to linebacker, which, you know, makes him a pretty smart football player. But he also talked about his unique family situation growing up in West Bend before he transferred to Brown Deer High.
Yeah, I mean, I have five other brothers and sisters. Was four. We recently added a new one through the adoption system. But just having that many brothers and sisters with a single mom, you really have to rely and trust and work together. So I feel like those values will continue with me forever.
So one of the guys that we talked to at this guy's was Tristan Wirfs, it was Patrick Queen. Now, some of the mock drafts have got him as the Packers' first-round pick at number 30. Played at LSU, national championship team, hybrid-type player, and we asked him if he'd been interviewed by the Green Bay Packers.
Devin White, Deion Jones, Quan Alexander, Wolquan Smith, those type of guys, just trying to take every little piece, like I said, from those guys. Everybody has a different part of their game that they can highlight, and I try to get a little piece of them.
Yeah, I mean, he talked about, you know, those are the guys that he's tried to model. He said, yeah, he's talked to the Packers, he's talked to the Raiders, several other teams, but, you know, this guy's a speedy hybrid linebacker that obviously, you know, the Packers feel that they need to do a better job of stopping the run. Tristan Wirfs is a guy that Patrick Queen also said, and Zach Bond from the Badgers, the right tackle for Kirk Ferentz and Iowa, just a beast. This is a guy who can, you know, lift 450 pounds. He's 6'5", had a nice time. I think he had a 4.87. 6'5", 4.87 in the 40.
Wow.
Yeah. And again, it's another one of these opportunities where these guys open up and they talk about their life. Tristan Wirfs, this right tackle out of Iowa, he talked about what it was like growing up in a small town like Mount Vernon, Iowa.
You know, growing up in Mount Vernon was really nice. You know, we lived in the trailer park with my grandma up until kindergarten. You know, then we moved into, you know, the house that my mom still lives in, and my grandma moved in with us. You know, my mom was kind of like the rock of the family. You know, she did her best to get to all my events and my sister's events, and even when they overlapped. You know, she's worked at Target for 28 years, so she's a pretty hardworking person. I think that's kind of, you know, I got my work ethic from her 100%. You know, my sister's going to graduate in May, and she's going to go to Wartburg College to study psychology. You know, I think my favorite part, you know, growing up in Mount Vernon was, you know, getting to play all four sports with my buddies, you know, going from sport to sport to sport all year long, you know, getting to compete with them. And it's nice, you know, you go from travel, you know, you got your travel baseball teams or whatever and when you're a kid, and you get to know all their siblings, all their parents, you know, their parents and everything. So it's just a pretty, being part of a tight-knit community like that, it's pretty special.
Pretty impressive story, right? I mean, the things that he overcame to become a guy who could likely go in the first round of the NFL draft.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, Jeff, you mentioned about wide receivers. Yeah, that's obviously a need for the Packers. Now, one of the things, too, that I have found interesting is that, you know, some of the guys were able to talk to the agents that were in the building because they had their meeting Thursday. And, you know, ESPN, Rob from ESPN, and Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and even Sports Illustrated able to sit down with some of those agents. And so they're talking about, like, Austin Hooper, who's 26, coming out of the Atlanta Falcons, he's going to be a free agent. He might be in play, and that the Packers have inquired with his agent about, you know, keep the phone open when we get to March 18th and free agency. So that would probably solve the problems at tight end. I mean, Jimmy Graham's going to be 33 and, you know, signed a $30 million deal that, you know, frankly, you know, he's come up short in these last 3 years. Joe Schobert, the pride of Waukesha, former Badgers linebacker, now working for the Cleveland Browns. He's going to be a free agent, and the Packers are one of the teams that have lined up and talked to his agent as well. And so those are just some of the free agents that they may use to try and solve some of their problems heading into 2020. Then there's guys that are in the draft. Now, Quintez Cephas is the wide receiver out of the Badgers, who, you know, was able to get that, you know, double not guilty verdict last summer, and it saved his college career, had a big season. He benched 23 times, 225 pounds as a 6 foot wide receiver. Pretty amazing. And I asked him about, you know, when you get to the NFL now, if you're going to play for the 49ers or even Matt LaFleur, these receivers are, you know, you're supposed to be responsible for blocking for the running backs like Aaron Jones. Talk about, you know, you're blocking downfield for Jonathan Taylor your last year at Wisconsin.
Yes, sir. Being a tough, competitive player in the run game and being a complete receiver was something that I wanted to do. Being at Wisconsin, it was the reason I made my decision to go to Wisconsin, because I knew it would challenge me to be a complete receiver, to be a run blocker and be catch balls and make, you know, help change Wisconsin's offense to give them down the field threats. And, you know, in the run game, JT, we know he can get to the second level really fast. And being in position is key. It can make a 8 yard gain, a 30 yard gain, or a touchdown. So coach always emphasized that we're the difference in the run game. And we took that very seriously. And, you know, that's definitely something that I want to do to separate myself at the next level, being a complete receiver.
Was there something Paul Christ told you in this past season, like, hey, you're there, nice job? Right. And did you lay somebody out that they played back on film?
Right. One time Kendrick had an end around against Michigan State, and I was able to get my block in. I put the guy on his back, and that was something, you know, the O-line loves when they see receivers doing things like that, blocking and, you know, fighting hard when the ball is not in their hands. You know, and that's how you really gain respect at that level. And that's something that I really enjoyed.
So Quintez Cephas, you know, making some waves there. Unfortunately, though, yeah, I think what turned out to be the slowest time of the wide receivers in the 40-yard dash. And then we got to talk to Mike McCarthy. It was great to touch base with him. He's so excited to be back into the saddle with the Dallas Cowboys, but he's walking into a team that's got 25 free agents, including the quarterback, Dak Prescott, and Cowboys owner Jerry Jones talked about where they are in contract talks with their quarterback.
This is a deal that ultimately I have to do. When I say do, I have to sign the check. It's got to fit. It just has to fit. And it has to fit a lot of things. And for me, this is not about Dak. It's about the team and about how to win. And that's not being in any way negative, I think, the world of Dak. But it's about the team. And if it doesn't feel right, it won't happen.
And then Jerry's got to decide about weapons for Dak Prescott, like Randall Cobb. Will he come back and be rejoined with Mike McCarthy, Amari Cooper? And he was asked, you know, Dez Bryant's on the beach and in shape. Would the Cowboys bring Dez Bryant back to Dallas?
I have not talked to Dez directly. I've been thinking about it a lot in the shower. I have been. I'm not dismissing it. I don't want to sound like it should be dismissed by saying that.
Right.
I'm thinking about it.
Steve, he's thinking about him in the shower.
That's ironic, because I've been thinking about Jerry Jones in the shower. So I guess it's a big circle, isn't it, Jeff?
Scary. Very scary.
Mike, thank you so much. Appreciate you coming on. Were you able to get down to St. Elmo's when you were down in Indianapolis?
I did not. You know why? Because if you don't book before you get down there,
yeah,
you know, forget about it, because it's booked for the – there's plenty of coaches and GMs in there having the shrimp cocktail and the steaks. But we had a couple of good meals down there.
All you got to do is show up and say, hey, I'm Clem Dog.
Yeah.
I want a table for 10,
yeah,
but it's just me. I like elbow room.
Yeah. Tell Goody to move over. I'm getting my steak.
Absolutely.
Mike, thank you so much. I appreciate you joining the show. And good stuff as always. Fantastic. Love hearing it. And just next stop is the draft, isn't it, for you?
It is. Thanks, guys.
All right. Mike Clemens on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline.
He's always fantastic.
He is.
Love the coverage from Clem. Has your passion outgrown your home? A Great Midwest Bank home renovation loan may give you the space it deserves. Visit GreatMidwestBank.com today. Simply local lending since 1935.
Coming up next from RacingNation.com, Fast Eddie Lapine on the Final Inspection Show. Hey, welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline from RacingNation.com, it is Eddie Lapine. Welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Hey, it's the 25th annual Amelia Island Concourse, which is just north of Jacksonville, Florida. Really, really cool event. Probably one of the top concourses on the East Coast. This year it's pretty special because they're going to be honoring a guy who's been in the news a lot lately, and that is Roger Penske. And, of course, what is Roger Penske known for? And that's winning a lot of Indianapolis 500s. And I guess they're going to have 5 Indianapolis 500 winning cars at the Amelia Island Concourse, as well as a few others. And, of course, one of my favorite one, of course, is the first one, and that's the 72 M16 Biafi that was driven by the late Mark Donahue. And Eddie, when you think of Penske and Amelia, it's certainly going to be pretty special this year, isn't it?
Well, I mean, a couple minutes, but I could take a half hour just saying how big a deal this is going to be for Bill Warner and his whole cast of people, that this Concorde was rated the best in the world a couple years ago by the international media and everybody involved. And Bill Warner has taken it to a new level. There's going to be so many people there that were associated with Roger. Bobby Unser is going to be there. Al Jr. There's just going to be so many people involved with Penske organization. 30 cars that Penske has raced over the years. And what better person to honor, finally, to nail him down, because it's not a race weekend. They literally moved the show up a week, because it's normally the same weekend as St. Pete Grand Prix. And for this to happen, I think it's just going to be an incredible – this will be my 16th or 17th Amelia Island, and I think Bill Warner is just going to make this just a memorable one, definitely.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. I got a buddy of mine who's helping out he's actually rebuilding and getting it ready for the concourse, a 1968 Eagle Chevrolet that was the first Indy car driven by Mark Donahue, and that car will be at the event too. So, I mean, they're actually on right now. They're actually working on the car, getting it, doing the final preps on it, putting the engine in, doing all the suspension components and whatnot. So, they're thrashing on that to get that down there. That's one of pretty cars
and
too.
One of your buddies is going to be there. He's making the track. I talked to him the other day on the phone. Was a man by the name of George Fomer. I called him on his birthday.
Excellent.
And he answered the phone. What the hell do you want? He 86.
Yep.
And he told me he was never going to make the trek to the East Coast again. He's just, you know, his travel days are over with. But he said this is one that he's coming to, and what better person to be there is Mr. Fomer himself, talking about the 917 Porsche, one of the most famous and iconic cars
in the Penske stable.
Yep, and that's, of course, the Amelia Island Concourse, 25th annual Amelia Concourse next week. You can look them up online at ameliaconcourse.org for ticket information and that. It's a must-attend event, and you can also follow it online, too. There will be happening. There'll be things you'll be able to follow it all weekend long on Facebook Live and all sorts of stuff. That if you're not able to make it, you can follow it along. So it should be a neat event. Switching gears back to NASCAR, Eddie, let's do our picks for Cal Fontana. What do you got in the Xfinity Series?
Briscoe.
I like that pick. And then Cup, what do you think?
I got to go with I've been tossing this one up, but I'm going to go with Kyle Busch. I think he's going to break
Kyle
out
Busch.
Here.
All right. Jeff, what do you like?
In the Xfinity Series, I'll take Cindric. For the big boys, give me DiBenedetto.
Matt DiBenedetto, I like that. I'm going to go with Brad Keselowski in the Cup Series, and I'm going to go chalk with the Xfinity Series with Chase Briscoe. Eddie, thank you so much. Appreciate it. You joining the show. Also like to thank David Land and Dennis Michelson and Larry Janicek for joining the show, and my voice for making it the entire 2 hours. And let's not forget Mike Clemens for all that good stuff from the Combine in Indianapolis. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.